go.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, here we go. It is. It would ordinarily be More In Monday here on the Horn, and it may yet be. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to be, for instance, part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live. Just head on over to HeadOn.live, click on chat room, pick out a screen name and a password, jump right in, and you will be immediately met and greeted by the likes of Anatole and maybe me, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. He is also a harvester of pomegranates, Sparky is, he tells me. More will be arriving presently. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that we are hot and true on both streams. And a big shout-out to our buddy Carl in Ohio on his birthday. Happy birthday, Carl. Happy birthday indeed, and many happy returns. P.S. says, Brother Deacon Asa, tell the Morans to get a brame. Yep, get a brame, Morans. Get a brame. Put down the guns, Morans. Put down the guns. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We began a week that, well, I actually had one member of the community tell me over the weekend, I wish you were on the air tonight. That was Saturday night. And to be quite honest, I thought about it. But it wouldn't have come to anything because, well, nobody expects me to be on the air on Saturday night. And I don't know what I would have said Saturday night. It probably would not have been. It has taken me this long to feel like I had even a remote chance of being anything resembling sane after, Thursday, and then Friday, and then Saturday. And then I wake up this morning, and hey, CNN's gotten another bomb. I feel like I'm morning driving fucking Beirut. Uh-oh. I'm back to the fun words already. Didn't quite make it 4 full minutes before the first F-bomb. Sorry. I'll work on that. How is Saturday not the focus of this program? You know, there's no joy, there is no pleasure in saying that I have been warning about this for freaking years. Oh, geez, hung like Jesus, that's mighty nice. Bob, I've been waiting to hear your voice all day. I swear it's the only thing I look forward to now. I look forward to the opportunity to get either in front of or behind the microphone. I've never really sorted out whether I'm in front of or behind it, because I don't know. Never mind. But at the same time, while my head has been boiling with thoughts and curiosities and observations and the occasional just raw, shrieky screams all weekend, I find that it's hard to bring it to into some sort of coherent focus. So let's work for some normalcy here. We do one thing at the beginning of the program, and that is to thank our subscribers. We are in the middle of we're in the midst of fundraising Free Radio, and thank God for that. Well, you know, the Flying Spaghetti Monster, whatever. But thanks very kindly going out to our subscribers. Thanks to Charlene. And thanks so much to our buddy Smitty in Florida. And thank you very kindly to Philip. And thanks to our buddy Harold, the president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Sochtris. Thank you, Harold. And thanks to Sharon. And thanks to Randy in PA. And thanks as well to our buddy Robert in Australia, and to Susan, and to Jules. Thank you one and all. I'm sorry about it. And so, beginning with a sense of gratitude for what keeps this operation going is a good place. So thank you. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks to everybody who responded to our buddy Steve from Georgistan, who just wanted to make sure that we thank our local postal workers and came up with that idea on Friday. There have been a lot of people who have told me I'm doing exactly what Steve said. And I did it today. I had reason to go down to the post office, and I spoke to my postmistress. I had a handful of filthy right-wing mailers. And I said, would it do me any good if I wrote return to sender on them? And she said, no, they're not first class, so I don't get to send them back. She said, if you want to do that, you can, but it'll just be a matter of me putting them in the garbage. And I said, well, I'll just put them in the garbage here. And she said, oh, you're going to put them in my garbage? I said, yeah, because I'm not taking them back home. I hate this poisonous stuff. But along the way, I thanked her and I said, listen, you know, I come down here and pick up packages when you tell me I got packages and things like that. And I recognize that maybe some of this makes you feel a little or a lot nervous, and I just want you to know that I appreciate the job you do. And she smiled and she thanked me. Now let's see. Megan says, subject line, F-bomb. The events of the last week are worthy of all you got. I really missed you over the weekend. Don't be afraid to go live on weekends when events demand it. Well, thanks, Megan. I don't know if I could have said anything. I may have just opened the microphone and shrieked. Clarity says, you've been telling us about it for a farthing of famine and impudence and then some, but nobody listens to prophets. That means you is one. Thank goddess for small blessings. I hope that was one of your aspirations. No, not really. As a wee little teeny tiny kid growing up in Alabama, I wanted to be a Roger Mudd. I don't know, but that's just how I put it when I was, you know, like 2-3 years old. So I guess this is kind of close, huh? But I wanted to talk about what happened in Pittsburgh, and I have an abiding love for Pittsburgh. I've said on a multiplicity of occasions here that it's one of my favorite, well, it's probably my favorite middle American city, because I don't consider Pittsburgh to be an East Coast city. I adore Pittsburgh because it's basically the biggest city in Appalachia, and I love the people there, the friendliness, the kindness, and I can imagine, although I cannot say I know, the horror they must feel, but my heart aches for the entire city and for the congregation in particular there at the Tree of Life. So I thought it might be good if I could get somebody on the phone who could get us a little closer to the idea or a little better sense of what it's like in Pittsburgh right now, what people are saying, how people are feeling. And several years ago, I was driving home from the airport in Pittsburgh, and it was night, and I happened to be, because I do this, I scan the radio dial, and so I happened to land on one of the AM stations there, in particular, KDKA. And I heard a guy talking there, and I was really, really impressed with what I heard. And so we became acquaintances, and I have asked I've asked Eddie Crow to join us this evening, and if you'll give me a moment here, I'm going to get him on the line. Stand by, please. So if the stress line is working appropriately with the previous introduction, let me bring on Eddie Crow of KDKA in Pittsburgh. Hey, Eddie, thanks for taking time to join us on such a rotten, lousy, painful topic.
I appreciate it. How are you, man?
I'm not okay, but I'm sure I'm not okay as you and the city is.
It's a strange thing to watch, and I didn't realize it when I was a kid. I realize it now. People deal with unimaginable horror in different ways. Some reach out to hug, some reach out to punch. A lot of people are trying to sort out how they're going to try and sort this out, because I was in the studio Saturday and was on the air, and this all was going on Saturday. And it was amazing, and you know this, when you're a media type, you're doing what you're supposed to do, and you kind of back burner the emotional stuff. The last day has been all of the people that dealt with this professionally. The last day is, it's really been their day to kind of stare at their feet and try and sort it out. We got a little bit of a delay in it because we had the excuse of saying, well, we got to be focused, and we got to pay attention, we got to get it. That's gone, and I think it's sinking in a little bit more. And there are a lot of people in this city that want to do something and want to say something, and those first words and those first actions won't come out because all of this is still getting processed. When it happens on the planet, it's sad. When it happens and you see names that you know, and when you see names – a Facebook follower posted a couple hours ago. He just found out one of the people killed was his doctor. And that information is still getting processed. It's almost, in a weird way, it reminds me of 9/11. I was on the air with 9/11 too. You don't know how to react to it. You just kind of keep pinching yourself going, okay, I'm going to wake up. This didn't happen. After two or three pinches, you realize, okay, it happened. Now what? And that's where the city is now, with now what?
And I have no idea what that must feel. I think you are well positioned to say that this is similar to a 9/11 sort of a situation. It's, It's jarring all the way to the viscera. And let me simply ask, if you wouldn't mind, please, you know, maybe just as a way of sort of grounding the conversation, for people, you know, for people who don't know Pittsburgh, a little bit of a background, please, on the Squirrel Hill neighborhood.
Okay, Squirrel Hill is, if you've never been to Pittsburgh, I discovered it 20-something years ago when I moved here. Pittsburgh is not a big city. Pittsburgh is a collection of communities that all just happen to be really close together. If you drive from downtown Pittsburgh to where I live, it's 19 miles, and I drive through 7 or 8 different towns. It's not a massive metropolitan, all-encompassing place. Every different part of Pittsburgh is a neighborhood and a community. Squirrel Hill is 10 minutes at most east of University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, Carlo University. It is an old neighborhood. It's a neighborhood that has a lot of academics and a lot of educators. But the majority, not everybody, but if you would use the phrase, the old-timey Jewish community centers around Squirrel Hill. It's 10 minutes from, 15 minutes tops from downtown Pittsburgh.
Okay, and it's my understanding that Tree of Life has been there since something like 1864. So yes. It's a deeply grounded community as well.
You're talking about third and fourth generation that have all been there. And like I said, because of its proximity to the universities, a lot of educators there. That's the center of the, if you say, the Pittsburgh Jewish community. Everything is in around Squirrelville. And that's just the way it's been literally since before the turn of the century. When people started coming to Pittsburgh to work, to do steel, you moved into whatever neighborhood you were most comfortable. Every one of the different neighborhoods around Pittsburgh, there is a little bit of a different, not ethnic flavor, but ethnic history. For the Hebrew community, Pittsburgh is Squirrel Hill, and it's 12 minutes from downtown.
And it is not insular in any sense. It's fully integrated into the larger Pittsburgh community, though, isn't it, Eddie?
Oh, no. If you don't, it's another one of the things you don't realize until you live here. If you don't know that you just went to a quote-unquote different neighborhood, you have no idea. You have no idea. I mean, you might recognize, oh, this must be the Jewish neighborhood because of the propensity of synagogues. But going from one neighborhood to the other, unless you grew up here knowing, okay, you just left Oakland. Like, University of Pittsburgh is technically Oakland. You will go from Oakland to Squirrel Hill in 2 minutes. You have no idea that anything changed. But culturally, that's where the history is. There's nothing insular about it. It's just that's Squirrel Hill's the Jewish community. That's it.
And also we've been told over the weekend, of course, it is also literally Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. So
he lived 2 blocks from where this happened.
So with a little better geographic understanding of where and what we're talking about, Eddie, and I don't think I can go into talking about the victims just yet.
I'd kind of like to
get a sense of the, because you know you talk to Pittsburgh. I mean, you hot up a mic and Pittsburgh calls and says, "Hey Eddie, this is on my mind." What is the tenor there? What has been the tenor there since the ascension of Trump?
Well, to understand politically, not just Pittsburgh, but the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and generally speaking, and of course there are exceptions. But if you had to look at a map and say, okay, draw the Democrat area, draw the Republican area, Commonwealth of Pittsburgh is very much Democrat, at the ends. Pittsburgh and Philly are more Democrats. I literally, it's been 50 some odd, I don't even know how many dozens of years since Pittsburgh had a Republican mayor. Everything in between Pittsburgh and Philly leans Republican. Pittsburgh and Philly lean Democrat. So you get a little bit of everything, but the general attitude is, particularly, it's a younger city than most people think. It's not steel anymore. It's medicine, and it's education, and it's technology. Well, that's a younger demographic. The younger demographic tends to be more on the Democrat side than the Republican side, but you still have, the term is old school yinzer. If you're a Pittsburgher,
I know yinz. I speak yinz.
You know what a yinzer is?
I speak yinz.
Yinz guy's going to go downtown, go Permanis.
Yeah.
When my daughter was born in Pittsburgh, I still remember this. The nurse came in and started talking to my mother-in-law and talked to her for 5 minutes, then left. My mother-in-law looked at me and said, oh, my gosh, what did that woman say? The old school, like the Yinzers, and that's, you know, you've grown up here and you're 50, 60, 70 years old.
Yinz want to go down to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries.
That's it. Yinz guys, well, you know the joke, right? How do you know you're attending a Pittsburgh funeral? There's a big pile of French fries on top of the casket.
That's about the size of it. The size of it.
So, it's its own weird, wonderful, amazing. I came here sight unseen literally 22 years ago. I've had several opportunities to leave. I love this place. But there is, it's not a divide, but there is a difference. The typical 20-something in Pittsburgh is probably Democrat. The 60, 70 retired old steel workers might not be so much. So you get a little bit of everything. Politically, like I said, it may be the 40s or 50s since there was a Republican mayor here. So a lot of that comes from, the union side of things. With all the heavy industry and all the steel that was here, that's where that started up, with the unions and the labor movement.
Well, what about the community where the shooter came from?
Normal community, typical. Not far. It's not this. It's another weird thing about Pittsburgh. Where he's from, again, 15 minutes from downtown. Working class community, middle class community, older neighborhood. Anything close to Pittsburgh, going to be older. But nothing. If you said, well, he came from here, nobody looked at that and said, whoa, that made sense. Or, whoa, that's stunning. It's just another Pittsburgh neighborhood. Most people would look at it as like a subdivision, but it's not. It's just another section near town, working class.
So, the entire country, Eddie, is engaged right now in trying to figure out the hows, the whys, and the wherefores of this. You've been there a couple of decades. When's the last time you heard of a Klan rally or anything equally odious there?
In the city? Never.
Right. I mean, I thought that was going to be the answer.
Now, if you get further out, Westmoreland County to the south, Butler County to the north, if you get away from the metropolitan area, like I said, just like Philly, you drive an hour in from Philly, the political climate's very different. You drive an hour east from Pittsburgh, the political climate's different. Those things do happen, and there are things like that. But as far as those happening in the city and really close, no, nothing like this.
So are we to is the takeaway that this guy was just quietly radicalized and weaponized? Because he was sitting behind some computer terminal?
There are theories about that, and the frustrating part was people started trying to apportion blame before anybody really knew what happened. And now we're getting back to that to try and sort out why this happened, what this happened, and getting into the guy's social media posts. and all of that.
And the social media.
I mean, you know what's really weird? I know people that went to high school with the guy because they've gotten in contact with me. And I asked them, I said, what was this guy's deal then? And they said, nothing. He was just a normal guy. There was nothing outstanding, positive or negative, that they thought. He was just a guy from that neighborhood.
Well, I confess I'm deeply suspicious of the degree to which right-wing radio and right-wing media generally and right-wing social media have weaponized mm-hmm. our country, Eddie. And when I saw the early, I try to be kind of up on the things that they're hating so that I can be out in front of the curve. And I had never heard, I know people who had, I had never heard of this organization that he cited, HIAS, H-I-A-S.
Yeah, what it is, they help Jewish people come over and immigrate in the United States. That's what it is, and that's what it's been, and that's what it's always been. And there's never, ever been any connection between that organization and anything negative. So when I saw that, I was just like you. It's like, wait, I think that's that immigration organization. What the? Okay. But, Bob, look, man, you and I both know this. If I sit, no matter what it is, if I'm deciding I'm going to be angry, I can find something to be angry about. It doesn't necessarily have to be particularly logical.
Well, that much is absolutely true. It was my understanding, having done a little bit of digging around, that Hyas did sort of transition. I mean, they've always been an immigration organization, but they expanded mm-hmm. they expanded their mission beyond people who were Jewish in who were in danger in refugee
right.
status, that sort of thing. And it didn't take me very long. I looked it up, and it took me, I think it took one search, and mm-hmm. I found a report from 2013 from some right-wing outfit shrieking and howling about how Hyas is funded by the Tides Foundation, which is connected to George Soros, which is it was sickening.
Right. Hey, man, you and I both know this, too. If I'm bound and determined to hate, I ain't going to let facts or reality get in my way. I'm going to find just enough to augment my hate. I'm not going to dig deep enough. I might find something that would take away. I'm going to look for something to lash out at.
Well, that's the absolute truth. Let me ask you this. The Pittsburgh Police Department did a fantastic job under the brutal mm-hmm. circumstances in terms of their response. I think the entire transaction was, 14 minutes long from first shot to him being neutralized?
Yeah.
He only quit shooting because they managed to shoot him enough to make him stop. Is that correct?
He only quit shooting because he came out crawling to surrender after the officers returned fire and he was hit multiple times. That's why he stopped.
God almighty. Have they done any work yet at finding out where he lawfully obtained his firearms?
Haven't seen anything about that yet. I'm sure, that's the process that's going on now, is figuring out how did this happen, where did this happen. People are looking for what I guess they think should have been red flags on social media, but haven't seen anything in terms of the weapons or anything like that. Now, talking about the police officers, the first call came in about it at 9:54. Police arrived at 9:55.
Amazing.
Yeah,
and they walked into a firestorm.
And they walked into, all they knew at the time were reports of shots fired at the synagogue and go. Because after they got there, they had to call back and say, we need more people, we need body armor, we need everything you can get right now. But the initial response was about 1 minute from the first call until officers started showing up. 954 to 955.
So, and just by way of full disclosure, you and I both grew up in what can be called a gun culture.
You know, Northwest Alabama, I got everybody in my family had multiple guns. They still do. And that's just the way, that was reality. That was a part of your life. You hunted and you fished and you had guns. And that was it. It wasn't good or bad. That was the reality that we all lived in. But you and I also grew up in a time where if you and I had a problem, let's say we was talking about where we grew up, you and I run into each other at the Biscuit Village on Woodward Avenue. If we had a problem, we'd go out in the parking lot and one of us would whip the other one's butt. And that'd be the end of it.
Right, and there wouldn't be any need for gunplay.
No, and everybody had guns, but that didn't happen. You went out and somebody whipped somebody else's rear end. And that was the end of it. You didn't get your butt whipped and then run back to your truck and get your gun and come back. That wasn't it. There were guns everywhere, always. But that never happened. That was never the next response to conflict was, well, I'm going to go get my gun. I don't ever remember that growing up being a concept that got put forth.
The reason I mentioned the way I did is because accents notwithstanding, there's a certain transferability to Western PA.
How so?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of woods, a lot of streams, a lot of hunting, a lot of fishing.
Hey, Bob, they first day of deer season in Western PA, the schools are closed. They close school.
Same here.
On the first day of deer season because everybody's going out deer hunting. No, the gun culture, especially in the outlying areas like you're talking about, you get 15 minutes out of Pittsburgh, if you're on the correct road, you're in the woods, man. I mean, you ain't in a suburb. You're in the woods. That gun culture absolutely exists here. You're right.
But it's not a gun culture of people going out hunting deer with a Glock pistol with 19 rounds in it. And that's the fact of the matter is, Bowers was strapping, what was it, three Glock semi-automatic pistols, and one fully loaded AR-15.
Right. Well, talking about the culture that you and I know, when I was growing up, if you went squirrel hunting and you went with five shells and they heard you shoot five and you didn't come back with five squirrels, well, they'd laugh at you.
Right.
And the theory, and I heard it growing up from my family, my uncles, all of them, the theory is if you can't kill whatever you're trying to kill with one or two bullets, then you probably don't need to be picking a fight with it.
I think we must have grown up across the street from each other and just didn't know it.
Right behind Biscuit Village, two blocks from Fame Recording Studios, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know it very well indeed. So with the understanding that, okay, there's a gun culture, and, mm-hmm. you've got a city in the middle of a fairly rural part of the world.
Sure.
I'm gobsmacked for trying to make some kind of sense out of this, and I'm getting nowhere, Eddie.
Well, I can tell you.
Okay.
I can absolutely tell you. We're talking about gun culture right now, right?
Yeah.
Gun culture has become synonymous with a culture of violence and a culture of we are living right now in a zero-sum reality. There's no middle ground. It's either one or the other. And when people say gun culture, a lot of people now instantly assume, oh, it's violence. Well, it's not. We just talked about the culture you and I happened to grow up in. It was an absolute gun culture, but it wasn't a culture of violence, and it certainly wasn't a culture of I'm 100% right, you're 100% wrong. That justifies me doing anything I can because I'm right and you're wrong. That's very different. And people, when they say, well, it's a gun culture, there's been gun culture since there's been guns. That doesn't automatically mean it's a violence culture. That's cultural. That's not what you've got stored in your gun safe.
Well, I couldn't agree more. So up there, do people go up to the John Eagle with a gun strapped on to get a loaf of bread and a jug of milk?
I've seen public carry. I'm trying to think. I've seen it in the city. I don't ever remember seeing it. Now, I live one county over. I live in Beaver County, home of Joe Namath, while we're talking about Alabama.
Absolutely.
Okay. Beaver Falls is 8 minutes from me. You get out a little bit further, you'll see it every once in a while. A month or so ago, I was at a grocery store out in Chippewa, which is Beaver County, and a guy walked by, and he had a gun on his hip. My daughter, you talking about gun culture? My daughter was driving back from Chicago. She needed gas. She decided, without checking with me, to stop in Gary, Indiana for gas. She called me once she got back in the car and told me every single person in the gas station had a gun. Every single one. It was like a Sheetz or a Wawa where you can go and get sandwiches and stuff also. She said every single person had a gun on them visible.
And, you know, if everybody is law-abiding, I guess, well, let me take it here. Bowers apparently obtained his firearms legally. The man had a clean record.
Yes.
And so we are constantly told by the NRA that, you know, you can't be taking away the law-abiding citizen's right to keep and bear arms just because somebody decides to slaughter 11 people in a synagogue. I find that to be a rather sickening argument. But the fact of the matter is, how do we know? I mean, how are we supposed to know, Eddie? Because, you know, as I've said before, the difference between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner is one consonant and the distance that the trigger has to travel in order to make the firing pin move.
Right. Well, I don't think you're ever going to completely know. And that's because of human beings. You know, like the introduction to the old radio show, The Shadow, who knows what evil lurks in the heart of men. That's always a possibility. That's always, as long as human beings are involved, there's going to be the possibility of somebody deciding, just snapping and doing something horrendous like this. And as far as the guns entering into that, I love the Second Amendment. My attitude is, you want to own a bazooka? All right, let's do a background check. And let's make sure that you haven't previously been problematic. Then, okay, here's the difference. When the Second Amendment was written, no weapon in history at that point was capable of firing dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of rounds. To say all guns are bad because of this, I disagree with that. There are some guns. There's one design that's to kill as many people as quickly as possible.
Right.
And that's what you saw. That's what you saw with the AR-15 in this case.
And the Glocks, frankly, as well, too, because, you know, we were talking about the folks wandering out into the woods going after deer and squirrels and whatnot. I doubt if 0.1% of those people are going out there with a Glock.
Well, if I shoot a squirrel with a Glock, there ain't nothing left for
squirrel. There's no squirrel left. There's not much Bambi left, for that matter.
Yeah. I told you how I grew up. If you needed 30 rounds to kill whatever you're trying to kill him, you probably need to not be killing it because he or it or whatever, you know. I've hunted with people that I trusted, but I wouldn't trust them with a gun that could shoot 60 bullets in a minute. And when you start hunting, and you know this, when you're a little kid, and that's when the gun culture around when I was growing up, that's when it started. You learned from a very young age what was up and how to deal with guns and how to approach it. Your first gun was not anything that would shoot 30 bullets. Your first gun was either a 22 long rifle, yeah. Or it was a single shot 410.
Exactly. And yeah. A breech loader.
Yeah, and that's it. Break it down, put your one, maybe if it's an over under, put two shells in it, and if you can't knock the deer down with those two shells, well, that was that deer's day. Those guns aren't the same as what's available now.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. So when you were on air Saturday night and things were particularly raw, what were you hearing from Greater Pittsburgh, Eddie?
Well,
I mean, was it mainly just the shock of it all?
Yeah, well, it was the before we get into the stuff that we're getting into now, because this started Saturday morning. I went on the air Saturday an hour after the vigil. And in my mind, I don't want to start yelling, it's this person's fault. It's disrespectful because you don't know everything. It's disrespectful to the victims. It's disrespectful to your own ability to reason because you're lashing out before you know everything. Saturday night was, what would you have the world know about your hometown? What's the message you would send to literally everybody in the world that's paying attention to this right now? Because this isn't somewhere else anymore. This is here right now. Everyone, like I said, it reminded me of 9/11 in the sense that you wanted to react. You wanted to yell. You wanted to scream. And you couldn't sort it out well enough to do it. And most people, I don't know if they know this or not, but it's good advice. Reacting emotionally is very seldom better than reacting rationally. Saturday night, there was no rational. Saturday night, we're going to talk about what message you want other people to know about where you live. Now, all the other stuff that we're talking about, where did the gun come from? How was he radicalized? Why weren't there? All of those things are now they're getting sorted out. And one more thing, there is a big hullabaloo about whether or not the president should come here because he's expected
I was going to go there, and I wasn't sure if you'd be comfortable with it, but there was a letter signed by a significant number of leaders from the Jewish community saying, don't come.
The petition is over 36,000 names now, and it's a strange thing, and it's interesting. Social media is the greatest horrible thing ever because it's kind of like when you're around a drunk that ain't drunk, you might not get the truth. When the drunk gets drunk, they're going to tell you what they think. You might not like it, but they're going to tell you, all right? Social media, before people react rationally and think before they hit send, they're just going to write what they're going to write, and it's going. And you've got two different things going on with the president coming tomorrow. One thing is he's the president of the United States. How dare anybody tell him not to come? And the other thing is if I'm having a party and I don't want you there and you show up, well, I've got the right to say, I don't want you there. And then you get into the respect specifically to the community. If the Jewish community is asking you, don't come, is it disrespectful to come in spite of that? It's going to be a mess. Tomorrow is going to be an absolute mess. And I'm on the air tomorrow night, so that should work out.
Oh, that'll be beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great word for it, man. That's a great word. It'll be beautiful in the most horrific way.
I admire your fortitude and your professionalism and being able to get through it because, this is Monday in West Virginia and I'm still struggling. The whole country's struggling, Eddie. And
I was dreading Saturday. I knew what would happen, and I've been through this. And you, as a broadcaster, you've been through this. I walked in and one of our producers was there, and he's a young kid, first real radio job. I walk in, and he's green, okay? And I'm like, hey, what's up? And he couldn't even talk. And I said, what's going on? Yeah, right? He goes, I don't know what to do. I go, exactly. That's why if you look out there, and I pointed out to the newsroom, that's why if you look out there, all those people, they don't know what to do either. So they're doing their job right now. And when they get home tonight, they're going to have to start sorting this out. And it was the same for me. It's like until 10 o'clock when I was on, we're going to share our feelings. But it ain't my job to share my feelings right now. I have a vehicle to do that. It was more important to let everybody else share their feelings. But I went home Saturday night, and I predicted it on the air. I went home Saturday night, and about an hour after I got home, just came completely undone. Couldn't do it before, and it wouldn't have been a benefit to do it before. But that's just like you're trying to deal with it now. That's what's going on here. People are getting over the shock and getting over the dumbfounded of it, and now they're looking for something to try and make it understandable. They're looking for something to lash out with their anger,
or just something that isn't something that's sort of connected to the earth that isn't that isn't spinning. When the news first broke, Eddie, and they talked about it being a bris and a naming ceremony,
right.
I think everybody just collectively thought, oh no. And then we waited, and we found, and they let out the news that no children were hurt. And we're
right.
Well, okay, but still, 11 human beings. And then it washed over me all over again when they did release the names of the victims, and particularly that of Ms. Rose Malinger.
Yeah, the 97-year-old lady.
97-year-old lady who can survive the Third Reich, survive the Holocaust, and can't survive the United States of America in 2018.
Can't survive going to a child's naming ceremony in her own neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. When you get to 97, you feel like you've kind of earned the right to die in your sleep.
Right.
Peacefully surrounded by your loved ones. And somehow or another, that is, well, it's all evil, Eddie. It's all evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And whether you're taking someone at the beginning of their life or at the end of their life, there's something fundamentally monstrous about it. I mean, monstrous as in not human. And
right.
it feels like that's the struggle we're in right now, is to understand that there's an element in this country that has abandoned its humanity. Is that fair?
Yes and no. I don't think there's an element in this country that has abandoned their humanity. I think there's always been an element in human beings that never had humanity. I don't think this is a new thing. It appears to be a much more insane thing because of what I mentioned earlier, social media. The worst of any human behavior is instantly available with video on your phone. Okay? The evil didn't just start existing 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. The evil has always been there. And that's you hit on a good point. Humanity struggles to sort out and understand utterly subhuman, inhumane acts because we're not capable of it. Being human beings with the ability to reason, with the ability to empathize, when those abilities don't exist in a person, and you end up where we are now, a rational person, and I saw this again, social media, I saw people over and over posting, I don't understand how a human being could walk into a room and just start shooting people they don't know. Right. That's because you and I are trying to look at it as human beings would. This is evil and subhuman. That's the first thing you've got to understand. There are some things that if you don't have the right tool set, you can't fix it. If you're applying logic from a human perspective and you're trying to sort out something so utterly inhuman, I don't think very many people have the ability to process it, thankfully, because they've never had to. They've been able to be human their whole lives.
But you,
that's tougher.
You and I don't have to look far to realize that, I mean, you know, for other examples, whether it's bombings in Birmingham or bodies buried in a dam in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
We have plenty of evidence that there are people like this.
Right.
I think we want, you know, you're right, because we aren't that way. We have a hard time fathoming it. But do you think, do you have any reason to believe that with the progress of the investigation, we'll find out more about his motivations or what weaponized him, especially given what you've told me that, you know, normal high school, normal, and then weaponized?
I'm sure there's going to be things that come out and they will be red flags for people to say, see, that's what did it, or this is what did it over here. But honestly, there's a part of me that doesn't ever want the ability to be able to understand it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because if you understand it, you can somehow or another almost predict.
Rationalize it
and predict that it's going to happen again.
Yeah. If I look at something and I say, oh, my gosh, whatever it is, that's a horrible thing. But I kind of get it. I'm not helping anybody. And honestly, another old saying, what's the point of understanding why? I want to deal with the what and make sure the what doesn't occur again. There are some things I don't need to know why you did it. I need to make sure that you don't do it again. If I understand why you did it, I've already given too much credit to your subhuman, and I've given too much credit to your hate to try to understand it to, okay, I don't want to do that, and I'm not going to do that. And I think the ability, it's a weird ability, and it's kind of unnerving. Our ability to rationalize what 20 years ago could never be rationalized, that ability is growing. And as far as I'm concerned, with every step that ability takes, humanity takes a step backwards.
Well, I think you're right, but it's also a matter of forgetting, because I think we knew once upon a time, or at least maybe the generation before you and me, our age group, we knew what manifest evil looked like because we had because Americans had gone and liberated the concentration camps.
Well, but then you see what you just said. Put that in terms of a timeline. We are at a time when there are people in this country that they know that. They know about the Holocaust, but it wasn't played out in real time in front of them. Just you mentioned the bombings in 63 in Alabama and the riots in, what, 68 in Birmingham, all of that, right? I am not old enough to remember it, but I know about it because all my family saw it firsthand. Things fade until they're shoved back up in front of you. You know, if the Holocaust, if you ask somebody now, well, what was that? Well, that was bad. The specifics of it, they didn't see it. They don't know it. As a culture, our history is about 30 seconds before we started talking.
Well, sadly, you're right, and I think you can ascribe that to a number of things. Eisenhower once said, for instance, on an entirely separate topic, Eisenhower said that any political party that proposed an end to Social Security would cease to be a national political party. And he was right, because the people who knew what America was before Social Security came along were very much alive and kicking when he said it.
Yep.
But now
they saw it.
now we have no one in this country who remembers the abject, horrifying poverty of the elderly in the years before the existence of Social Security, who have no means whatsoever of understanding what that meant, and so consequently now, what Eisenhower said is not true. Proposing an end to Social Security is not the death of a political party.
If you've never seen horrific, it's much, much easier to ignore explanations of horrific. And if it doesn't affect you directly, much easier to say, well, you know, it ain't my problem, or if you're nice about it there, but for the grace of God go I. Until it affects you, you're not going to pay as much attention to it. I mean, that's human beings. But the timelines we're talking about, I know it because I'm a history geek. Most people know the history of the reality from the time they were born or from the time they were in school. Before that, they might know the nuts and bolts and be able to take a quiz, but as far as understanding what it was, you know, people talk about the stock market crash and the Great Depression. Unless you lived literally trying to not starve to death, you really aren't going to get a full grasp of what that was about, because it wasn't firsthand to you, wasn't firsthand to the people around you. History becomes relevant when it becomes personal.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. So let me ask, you've been very generous with your time this evening, Eddie. Let me ask you, by way of sort of wrapping up, what are next steps in Pittsburgh? I know the funerals began today.
Right. With the particular sect of Judaism, one of the tenets is the services happen as quickly as they can happen. So that was today. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. But what I suspect is, once the period, it's going to be tomorrow. I'll just go ahead and say it. It happened Saturday. You've got funerals going on. There's going to be more. Everyone is, solemn's not the right word. Everyone's trying to be, not everyone, but most people are trying to be respectful. When that goes away, there's going to be all manner of screaming and yelling. And that timeline is absolutely kicking up, because the president said he's coming here tomorrow. And you've got people in the community that he's coming to support saying, we don't want you to support us unless you come out and say, all of this is bad. You've got other people saying, he's the president. He's coming to you. He's your president. So it's going to get real angry starting tomorrow.
Well, have they announced the place and the time, Eddie?
No. Just last I saw was tomorrow or Wednesday. He's expected to come in, and I don't know what's going to happen at that point, because, well, I think of it as going to a funeral. When you go to a funeral, everybody standing around is going to be calm and respectful. The minute the service is over and y'all get out in the parking lot, that's when the fistfights start. That's the next step in where we're going with this. Now comes the lashing out.
I remember how Barack Obama handled it when he went down to the memorial service at Mother Emanuel. It still gives me chills to see clips of that. I'll be honest, I have no reason to expect anything approaching that level of behavior, because we know who we're dealing with.
Well, wait a minute. The statement that he made Saturday evening when he was speaking at the FFA event,
right,
in Indiana, and then he was in Illinois, the statement he made was an absolutely presidential statement. And to discount that based on previous statements that he made, I don't think that was fair. Now, if you heard that and you said, well, that's presidential, but it won't stay that way, you're correct. And he's in a situation, and absolutely, you can make the argument it's in large part by his own doing. There are some people, it don't matter what he does or what he says. It's wrong and it's bad because it's him. Just like there are some people that it don't matter what he does or says, it's right because it's him. If you remove those two sections, and those two sections are the loudest, but statistically they are massively smaller cross sections than the world we live in. Those people are going to react the way those people are going to react because they've already decided that's what they're going to do. It's the reaction from the people that don't fall into those two camps that is going to take hold, and that's going to start tomorrow.
I think there are a lot of people who really hope against hope that if he shows up there, well, when he shows up there, that we can see something atypical. Because, frankly, starting back up this morning with more, you far more than me, because of what you do, I'm just out here on the internet, but you far more than me, you're a part of what he refers to as the enemy of the people,
right?
And he was
wait a minute. Why? Because he said mainstream media.
Well, I mean, you are part of traditional, TV, radio, newspapers,
Right, but that's only true for the people I just described. The people that absolutely everything he says is right, that's a small percentage of humanity. I'll be honest and blunt. If I am a threat to this country, I'd sure as hell like somebody to explain to me how.
That's not at all where I'm not suggesting he's right, Eddie.
Right.
But the fact that we were back to that this morning.
Worrisome. Play the hits. Yeah, but play the hits, man. If it works, you play it. There's a reason top 40 stations play the hot songs every 2.5 hours. They work. If something works for you, you're going to stick with it until it doesn't.
Hey, Bob, will you play Funky Town for my girlfriend? Yeah, I've been there.
Won't you bring it to Funky Town?
Yeah.
That's what's going to end up, man. I mean, one of these days, and I've told my boss this. I told him a couple weeks ago. I said, I'm going to come in here one day and just say, I'm done. And I'm going to clap my hands and flip them over like I'm walking away from a blackjack table. And I'm going to go back to playing rock and roll, which is the only reason I got into media was for concert tickets and CDs, Bob.
I know. And the vinyl with the little hole punch in the corner of the album cover. I've been there.
That's right.
Sure.
Studio copy, not for resale. Yeah, that I did. I got into media because, well, A, I wasn't remotely fit to do anything else, and B, hey, they're paying me to sit in a room and listen to rock and roll, and they're giving me concerts. What a deal. Now, the halcyon carefree days are gone, both in terms of where we've moved to as a country and, what I've done in the last 22 years, going from that to what I'm doing now. It's the grown-up table, and frankly, I'm about wore out with being a grown-up.
Well, that's one. If there's any advantage to working out here in the wilds of the internet is that from time to time we can cast that aside, or I can cast that aside and have a little bit of fun. It's just that, God Almighty, it's lately. I mean, this is the damnedest. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't remember four weirder damn days, Eddie.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the pipe. Here's what was most interesting to me about the pipe bomb guy. It wasn't that somebody went goofy and started mailing pipe bombs. I predicted that. It's like things are going to get bad and they're going to get worse. I had said that. What was amazing to me, and I guess it shouldn't have been because it's the groups of people I was just talking about, on the internet, on social media, before anybody knew anything about what was going on with the guy with the pipe bombs, I saw people posting that everything about this is the president's fault. And I saw people posting that this has nothing to do with the president. This is just a crazy guy. And it, literally, that all of those things started coming out. And people saying, well, what about the stickers on his van? Looking for reasons to diminish the accusations before anybody even had the information of the accusation put forth. Those are the scary people, and that's not left or right. The people that are going to find a way to make it work, their argument, regardless of the facts, those are the scary people, and they exist on both sides.
Well, I'm addicted to facts. I try to deal with them as much as I can. And as far as Mr. Sayoc is concerned, one of the first things I pointed out was that I was kind of gobsmacked that a guy just toddles around in a white panel van with crosshairs placed over people's faces, and it draws no attention.
Well, it drew some attention. There were people that noticed it, and there were people that took pictures of it before all of this happened. But one of the greatest things, and it's a dangerous thing, and it at times can be horrific in its results, but one of the greatest things about our country, at least up until recently, is you can be as goofy as you want to be. You can be as confused as you want to be, if it doesn't affect other people. So my favorite part of that story, you talking about trying to find humor, when I saw that story, I'm past, in the last 5 years, the way I leave the building has dramatically changed. I'm past thinking everything's fine. You become aware, and you check parking lots when you leave after a show and all that stuff. But my sanity is maybe find something goofy, just as an aside for a second. The goofy I found in that story was he was a stripper. He was a fervent churchgoer. He was a bodybuilder. He lived with his mom until his mom kicked him out, and he lived in a van.
Down by the river.
The only thing more Florida than that is if he worked at a gold by the inch store or drove like a purple Pontiac Fiero. That was it. It's like Florida in a nutshell. And
yeah,
I talked about this on the air.
Yeah, the whole thing is just Florida, man.
Yeah, I talked about this on the air, and I had a guy call me and scream, what's the matter with Florida? Nothing. But that's it. And people say, well, Florida's really nice. No, it's not. Parts of it are. But there's no middle ground in the state. Florida, God bless it, is nature's, or the United States, trailer park. It's not southern. I've had that argument before. Well, that's in the South. No, it's not. Culturally, Florida is as southern as Minnesota.
Well, the Redneck River. There's South Florida, Central Florida, and the Redneck Riviera.
Well, sure. Anywhere Stabler drinks a little bit nicer, yes. But there's no middle in Florida. You either live in a gated community, or you live in, you know, Flamingo Acres trailer homes. There's not a middle ground to it. And
well, anywhere you
in
see
a weird
over,
way,
anywhere you huh? see anywhere you see overdevelopment, Eddie. I noticed this a long time ago. If you look at it like on Google Earth, just far enough out, all the overdevelopment looks like one of those prints by the guy who did the initial design for Alien. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's just it's very articulated, and you go, "What?" But I'm one of these environmental weirdos who thinks that maybe there are just some places on the planet that a whole bunch of human beings aren't supposed to live. You know, in the middle of deserts is one, and in the middle of swamps is the other.
It's a good general rule. If they have to kill alligators to make room for your basement, you might maybe move your basement somewhere else.
Right. That's exactly. And to a certain extent, I mean, I live it every day here in West Virginia because there are parts of this country that have topography. Well, I mean, Pittsburgh, similar to West Virginia, with a lot more people on it than we have here.
Yeah. It goes from a massive amount of people to nobody at all. And it's very strange. And you're exactly right. That was when I came to Pittsburgh. Like I said, I had never been here. They flew me in. And the first thing I noticed was, oh, my God, there are hills here. This is so great. I love this. But there are places on this planet. I agree with you in that sense. There are places on this planet that Mother Nature and God built those places specifically not inhabitable by large groups of people in small spaces. Florida, flying in, I'm sure you've done this. Take a flight to Florida. If it's during the day, well, you can do it at night too. If it's during the day and clear, when you make your approach, look down. You think Florida is this panhandle and it's land. Florida is built up sand in places around water and alligators and swamps.
Well, I'm
it's
cursed.
Not a solid piece of land.
No, I'm cursed by a knowledge of history. So I have a working appreciation, for instance, for the reaction of the first Spaniards to land there. People like De Soto. And yeah, he was a brute. And his gang of thugs were brutes, but they got there and they realized that they were on the losing end of an equation that was good. And so they got out of there and headed for the hills literally as quickly as they possibly could, because you know they were running into bugs, the size of their helmets.
Yeah, and you're looking around going, why is it we're trying to conquest this place exactly?
Well, the reason they named it Land of the Flowers was, you know, Florida, to kind of cover up for the fact that they had just claimed a whole bunch of ground for the Spanish crown that the crown would probably be displeased to be owning.
Yeah, it's like there's a reason the people that live there don't live the way you're bringing your communities in to live. They've managed to find that middle ground harmony where we can exist in this environment the way we are with the numbers we have and the skills that we've developed. People coming in from outside, yeah, it's like walking into a buzzsaw. You have no idea until you get there. And I like that. They were brutes. Can you name one conquistador, one explorer, one world traveling anything that wasn't a brute?
Oh, in the era of colonialism? Absolutely not. And it didn't matter if they were Spanish, Portuguese, English, Dutch, or French, or even German. And yes, the Swedes. The Swedes even had a run at it for a while.
You're talking about land. All of the European countries are like, you know what? We're about out of inhabitable land. Where can we go? Well, those guys down there, they don't have the weapons we have. Let's just go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I often remember Robin Williams' response back when he was talking about his cocaine problem. He said, "You know, the cocaine was the indigenous gift to the people who stole their land. You take our land, we give you monkey for your back."
Yeah.
And you know, of all the diseases that the Europeans brought here, by God, they took one home that they'd never seen before.
Yep.
And lo and behold, the one time the indigenous people didn't get blamed, it wasn't long in Europe before it was being referred to as the French pox.
Yeah. Well, you got to blame somebody. If it's messing up your house and there's somebody across the street you can point at, you don't point at them, because it's easier to point at them than to look inward and come up and defeat your ego by saying maybe it's my fault.
Well, Eddie, let me just so people can check out your program. When are you on air?
Why would you want people to check out my program? Good Lord, you got more sense than that, Matt, man.
Well, you know, I enjoy it. I mean, you know,
I float around. I always do Friday and Saturday, and then during the week wherever they want me to do during the week. And this week it happens to be tomorrow, but always on Friday and Saturday nights. And I'll be honest with you, and we've spoken of this at other times. I watch people come in and they're doing what I do and they're doing it 5 days a week. I look at him and I go, man, good luck with that. It gets tiresome. It gets emotionally draining to do this all the time. So me doing it 3 days a week is just fine with me. But it's KDKA Radio, AM 1020. You can listen on radio.com, and you can follow me on my Facebook page. I always put posts when I'm on and what I'm talking about. And I get annoyed and occasionally post a picture of a kitty or a possum just to break things up.
I like possums.
But possums, dude, possums rock. Possums are the carp of the forest. They serve a wonderful purpose. They stop, we're talking about diseases, possums stop diseases because of all the things that they eat that they're immune to.
They're seldom, if ever, rabid. They put up, I say, we've got to watch possum, Eddie. I mean, I'm in West Virginia, okay? I like possums. I'm glad you brought them up, and I'm glad you're fond of them too.
I don't know. I don't have the slight. If you'd have put a gun to my head and said, "What are you going to talk about tonight?" I don't think possums would have come up.
Two guys from Northwest Alabama. Really, you didn't think that was possible?
Well, we haven't mentioned George Jones yet, have we? So we haven't gone the full step.
Well, he used to get drunk next door to me.
He used to get drunk next door to everybody, man.
You had to ruin it, didn't you?
I don't mean to take away your special, but if you can find a bar in Northwest Alabama that doesn't have a George Jones bounce check pinned up on the bulletin board,
they just ain't been open very long.
Yeah, because that was it, man. The old possum would come in and get liquored up and write you a check, and his thinking was, well, they ain't never going to cash it. They want my autograph. And said, there, Northwest Calvert County and Lauderdale County, full of checks pinned on walls, typically cinder block walls. George Jones wrote him a check for his night, and it bounced. Follow me on Facebook. That's why I drifted away with the possum talk. On Facebook, it's Eddie Crow on KDKA Radio, and it's EDDY.
EDDY, yes.
Yes, sir. CROW and, on KDKA Radio.
And you're over at Instagram as well. And
Instagram and Twitter, all at that same address.
And you know what? One of these days we'll do. Yeah, I think there's a real future in possum talk, Eddie.
Well, I tell you what. If you find somebody to sponsor it enough to keep me from starving to death, I'm in.
All right, Eddie Crow, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. It's a painful topic, but you have been you've been a real blessing, I guess is the right word, in helping to make a little bit of sense out of this.
Well, there's going to be some making sense. I think the first step is to recognize some of this will never make sense. And maybe we need to make our peace with that to save the energy and apply it towards the stuff that we can sort out. So you get a hold of me anytime.
All right. You take care, Eddie.
All right, brother.
Bye now. And that was, of course, Eddie Crow of KDKA in Pittsburgh. Like I said, I felt like we would do well to get some perspective from on the ground there. And I couldn't think of anybody better to reach out to than Eddie. I do. I listen to Eddie quite frequently, especially when the schedule permits. And I have never heard him. I've certainly never heard him mail in a program. And there's a lot of talk out there. And I love the work he does. His conversations with folks up in Pittsburgh, and again, I have as soft a spot as I have for any city in the United States for Pittsburgh. Radio.com is the app on your phone, and you know, just check him out on Facebook and check out his program from time to time. You will not be disappointed. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. We are at 19 minutes past the hour, and one of the things that I had planned on doing is just generally opening the phones for your responses, your ideas, your You know what? If you need to bellow and scream, that's okay too. So all the phone lines are open, 304-640-2829. That's also toll-free, 844-843-4676. The other line, 304-574-8178, that's the same as Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And so, you know, there's multiple ways of getting in, and I'm still at a loss for words. I think Eddie and I probably, you know, I don't think we'd have to leave the bar and go out and fight or anything. His perspective is somewhat different than mine because I've spent a lot of time watching this stuff and waiting for it, but knowing that it was going to happen. And I have no reason to believe that Trump will be anything but who Trump is tomorrow or the next day in Pittsburgh. Although I do find it interesting that 36,000 people have signed a petition saying, you know, really? No, don't come. And the problem with that statement that he made that said, you know, it's going to take all of us to end anti-Semitism. That's true as far as it goes. But as was the case with Charlottesville, he had to be begged. He had to be begged to make that statement. We have reports out today that Jared and Ivanka were the ones who begged him. Yeah, Eddie just sent me a picture of a possum. And so, color me skeptical. What happens when I cipher? Bad things. And so I took his vote total. Because, remember, earlier today, we were informed by the White House press secretary that he won an overwhelming majority of voters. You can't get much more Orwellian than that. He lost 65 million to almost 66 million to around not quite 63 million votes. But apparently, in the world of alternate facts, that is now an overwhelming majority. But I rounded up and I took that 63 million votes and based on someone's statement that a tiny fraction of his supporters are the kind of folks who shoot up synagogues. Well, I started thinking, you know, what constitutes a tiny fraction? Okay, so 10% of 63 million would be 6.3 million. Okay, I can do that. Another exponential point down is 630,000. So if 1% of his base is 630,000, the question is it outrageous to think that 1% of the people who voted for Donald Trump are whatever we're calling it today, alt-right, white nationalist, white supremacist, Klan, Nazi sympathizer, Klan sympathizer, Klan auxiliary, skinhead, Aryan nations, identity Evropa. That is 630,000 people. And I realize that I'm getting close to fooling around in areas of mathematics in which I have absolutely no business. But if one were to assume that 630,000 was evenly distributed across all 50 states, then, which it isn't, of course, then that would mean that of Trump's base who are Nazis, etc., that there's 12,600 in every state. Some states are bigger than others, and some states are more white wing than others, so we recognize those breakouts are going to be different. And then, you know, then we can start working on the Venn diagram that has evangelical Christians and white wingers. And it doesn't get better, it gets worse, it gets more frightening. I confess that I sort of soothed myself over the weekend by listening to Chumbawamba several times. That one particular a cappella song that they sing. But it didn't provide much surcease. And I asked Eddie whether he thought we would learn any more, just because I'm a little bit cynical about it, whether we learn any more. By the way, Flavio let me know that Rose Malinger, 97 years old, who was murdered Saturday, that she was not of the Holocaust. She survived the Holocaust era, which is a nuance of difference. So that, you know, I'm never afraid to admit when I've been wrong. But as it doesn't change the brutality of it any. There are a number of stories that deserve to be covered, and I don't want to be taken the wrong way in any of this, but a friend who is Jewish sent along something that I found utterly horrifying. Sickening, even. And it's a story from Haaretz, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong. Rabbi, a man named Rabbi Lau, the chief rabbi of Israel, refused to refer to Tree of Life as a synagogue. Yeah, I'm not kidding. The chief rabbi of Israel would not refer to Tree of Life as a synagogue because it wasn't Orthodox, because it was what is referred to as conservative. And it reminds, you know, I've told the joke a million times that Anglicans refuse to recognize the authority of the Pope at Rome. Presbyterians refuse to recognize the authority of the Queen of England as head of the church, the Anglican church. And Baptists refuse to recognize each other at the liquor store. And frankly, I was saddened when I read that story. In fact, the chief rabbi of Israel referred to Tree of Life as, quote, a place with profound Jewish flavor, as if it was some sort of delicatessen. And I found that it was unspeakable. So, you know, there's that. And then within 24 hours or so, the fact that 11 human beings were slaughtered in their place of worship. And never for, look, I'm hard on religion. I know I am. And I don't plan on not being. Religion has done a great deal of harm in this world. But I am also profoundly committed to the idea that people need to be able to, must be able, as a cornerstone of any idea of secular governance, to be able to worship as they see fit and not be slaughtered for it. Not have their church bombed, not have their church burned, not have their children bombed in their churches, and not have their congregants blown away by a guy who had access to a military-style firearm because of a relentless campaign by a bloodthirsty organization that was originally founded to promote marksmanship in the aftermath of the Civil War. The NRA. And so when I read that the guy was carrying three Glock handguns and one semi-automatic assault rifle of the AR-15 variety, and when I compared that with the fact that because he was a convicted felon, SAOC couldn't purchase any guns, well, the outcomes became a lot more clear. Bowers was able to do what he did because he could walk into any gun store in Pennsylvania and buy as many guns as he wanted. Sayoc couldn't buy any guns at all. And he turned out to not be very good at bomb making. The bomb stuffer. A number of emails have rolled in. Early on, Steve in New York said, "I awaited your program because I want to see if other people feel as crazy as I do and that we are one hair from an American Kristallnacht. Perhaps I'm just sick, but I want to hear that I'm not crazy for seeing the gravity of the situation we are in and what the consequences are if the GOP maintains control next week." Well, I heard an almost immediate reference to Kristallnacht because the anniversary of Kristallnacht is this week. The night of broken glass. The night when Jewish shops and businesses and properties of civil life were attacked in one brutal, hateful night in Germany. Some 80 years ago. And I don't think we are on the verge of a Kristallnacht, Steve. I hope I'm right in that regard. Because Kristallnacht happened as a result of a full-on sanctioned national approach. It was nationalized hatred. We have not gotten there yet. We're at the stage where we're the country is being dog whistled and occasionally bullhorned with it. If that makes any sense. What I'm more afraid of is these weaponized individuals who are hiding in plain sight all over the country because we have made it insanely, literally insanely easy to go and get the necessary weapons of warfare with which, in the space of 6 or 7 minutes, to carry out an attack that wipes out anywhere from from 2 or 3 or 4 to 60 or 100. And to that extent, I will sit here and tell you, much to my horror, well, it's sort of that Churchill line. You know, what was it? After the Battle of Britain, he said, "This is not the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning." Well, something like that. This isn't going to go away. They're empowered. I mean, I was kind of surprised. I read an article shortly before airtime, and there was a citation into it, in the article, about someone giving an interview on Sirius XM's Breitbart Radio. And I thought, son of a gun, how about that? The seminal portal for the alt-right, by its own admission, the seminal portal for the alt-right, as we call it in this country, and the corporation that runs Sirius XM has said, hey, you know what would be cool? Giving them, let's give the seminal portal for the alt-right, the Nazis, the skinheads, the Identity of Europa, the Proud Boys, and what? Let's give them their own radio show on Sirius XM and make the people who subscribe to Sirius XM, whether they listen to it or not, pay for Nazi talk. You know, wow. How about that, sports fans? I mean, it just kind of blew me back. You know, really? Does Sirius XM also, and I'm not making a false equivalence here, I'm just looking for something. Does Sirius XM have the Antifa hour? Because I'm pretty confident that it doesn't. Yeah, as Arnold points out, but no, you or Rick can't have a show on Sirius XM. Fuck them. Well, not with yours, Arnold. Not even with yours. So, that just sort of grabbed me. Oh, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, in regard to the chief rabbi not recognizing Tree of Life. In other words, the state of Israel's apartheid is not directed solely at the Palestinians. It's directed at anyone who doesn't wipe the regime's rear end clean. Okay, he said ass. Including their own fellow Jews. It was disheartening, to say the least. Now, apparently, BB did come along and say, no, he's wrong. You know, after the bell had already been rung, after the horse was already out of the barn. But the other thing that this weekend, and look, not just Tree of Life, but Jefferson, Kentucky. A church there, and a Kroger's by default. And the bomb stuffer. I was reminded of and it's such an odd word, that term, stochastic terrorism. Terrorism perpetrated sort of by remote. The knowledge that if you dog whistle long enough, a dog is going to hear the whistle. And then the person doing the whistling says, Well, how could I have possibly known that somebody was going to be crazy enough to take what I was saying seriously? Oh, and by the way, for anybody who says that Bowers in Pittsburgh was crazy, well now, when you go, well, it's kind of like being in a bar. If you're shit-faced, falling down drunk, a bartender in almost any jurisdiction in this country has the right to refuse to serve you. In some cases, it is mandatory that they refuse to serve you. To the same extent, if you go to buy a Freedom Protector, or four, you have to look the salesperson in the eye and say, "I'm not crazy." Woohoo, woohoo. No, you do. You have to certify that you're allowed to purchase a firearm, and that you are not mentally disabled to possess one. That is apparently the case with Bowers. Somebody looked across the counter at him and sold him three Glock handguns and an AR-15, if, of course, he didn't buy them at a gun show somewhere. And this is counterintuitive, I know, but just because you walk into a synagogue and slaughter 11 elderly people, including some nonagenarians, some octogenarians, and two developmentally disabled brothers in their 50s, 54 was the youngest killed at Tree of Life. And he and his 59-year-old brother were both special needs of one sort or another. And Tree of Life was the pivot point around which they turned. They were beloved in the sanctuary, and they in turn loved that sanctuary. Jesus. Probably the wrong exclamation. But just because you slaughter people does not mean you are insane, and we need to take that bone deep. Just because somebody has been so thoroughly weaponized that they go out and massacre people . We make a profound mistake if we assume that that is some sort of evidence, prima facie evidence of insanity. It is certainly prima facie evidence of monstrosity, as I was discussing with Eddie. But it's not prima facie evidence of insanity. In fact, the legal test that is most often applied in such situations is that the person claiming insanity was unable to appreciate the nature and quality of his actions. Well, Bowers ran into Tree of Life with his Freedom Protectors blazing, screaming, "All Jews must die." And I'm not much interested in hand-wringing or pearl-clutching or hair-splitting over was he or was he not a Nazi. Oh, by the way, he also put on social media, "Fuck your optics, I'm going in." Which was a back reference to the, because there is one, out in the seedy, slimy, vermin-infested corners where these people congregate. There is there's an ongoing debate in the alt-right, white supremacist, etc., movement as to whether or not slaughtering Jews is bad for their image, whether they should slaughter now or take them home and slaughter them later. This is what passes for intellectual conversation in the white wing in this country. Horrifying, I know. Subject line, horror. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, we lost two law enforcement officers to AR-15 gun violence. Sergeant Farrah Turner was laid to rest yesterday with her service held in our civic center. Over 1,000 people attended. Sergeant Carraway died at the scene and had a similar ceremony 2 weeks ago. Again, this is the white winger who holed up inside his McMansion and blazed away. The perpetrator of our gun massacre had 130 guns in his house. Not to minimize the shootings and deaths here at all. However, these were professional law enforcement officers gunned down in line of duty. What bothers me so much is that this massacre in Pittsburgh was a hate-driven slaughter of innocent people in what should be a place of shelter and peace. I have been shaken by this. As have I, and as have we all, David. Just as we were shaken when the Nazi marched into Mother Emanuel there in your own state and laid waste about him. He murdered 9 innocents. This guy got 11. And as to the law enforcement angle, not angle, but the aspect, one of the things that makes it so plain that, you know, that Donald Trump is nothing if not, you know, a tool, is that almost as if he had been wound up and a button pressed, his first remarks on the topic of the massacre were to parrot NRA talking points.
Well, if they'd had protection,
you know, that's the word he used. If they'd had protection, like some teenager making reference to a fucking condom.
If they'd had protection, maybe it wouldn't have happened.
Well, this guy shot 3 law enforcement officers who were trained to respond to this sort of thing. A 4th was wounded by shrapnel, whether it be a ricochet or something, because the sanctuary is so shot up, according to the rabbi, that it will not be usable for any time in the foreseeable future. A place of worship like that is quite often beautiful, especially when it's old, and the woodwork is exquisite, and it's shot all to pieces now. But as Eddie pointed out, from the moment the shots fired report went out, the response time for the Pittsburgh Police Department was beyond commendable. But even getting there as quickly as they did, these trained professionals couldn't stop him. And 3 people were shot trying. Guess what happens if you have armed security inside the sanctuary? Well, he shoots him. He shoots the security and then goes about his business. It's as if Trump was talking about a soup that had too much salt in it. And his remedy is to put more salt in. That just makes it worse. Now, oddly enough, if you've got a soup that's got too much salt in it, you can neutralize the salt by adding more potatoes. There's our question. In this scenario, what are the potatoes? It's not more people to absorb the salt, i.e. the bullets, in this analogy. It is something that neutralizes the bullets. It's something that makes it as though the bullets, the salt, wasn't there to begin with. And the task at hand, as far as I can tell, is to figure out what are the potatoes. And I don't have an answer. Lee in New York. By the way, this is just a trivia moment. I mentioned being a little kid and wanting to be a Roger Mudd. Both Lee in New York and Ron in Raleigh immediately responded by email saying, "Are you sure you didn't mean you wanted to be Harcourt Fenton Mudd?" Well, now, it's been a long time since we've had a double identical obligatory Star Trek reference. So for both Lee and Ron in Raleigh, yeah, a jingle. But Lee in New York, in regard to the dog whistle, do you know how to make the dog whistle go farther? Follow Breitbart's example and use Sirius XM. Man, that's a dog whistle from space, Lee. Damn. Yeah. Subject line, protection. Lee says, if Fred Trump had used protection, we could be comforted by the words of President Hillary Clinton. See what happens when you think you don't need protection? Well played. Well played. And Steve in New York, how about less salt? I was waiting for someone to get there. That's the answer. But this wraps into politics inescapably. And this is not with regard only to what happened over the weekend and to gun violence generally. This is with regard to, well, pretty much everything. What happens a week from tomorrow is going to tell us a lot about whether or not we're going to have a country, at least one we recognize. If we take the House of Representatives, then there is a chance that we might be able to withstand a siege for 2 years. The best possible result is taking the House and the Senate, in which case we can stop him in his tracks. And instead of having to withstand a siege, break the siege. But even if we were to take the House and the Senate, please, please, please don't start deluding yourself into thinking that, oh, we're going to remove him from office, because we're not. That ain't going to happen. And I, at the risk of receiving a bunch of emails saying, stop telling us how to want to remove Trump from office, Bob, I would suggest that we don't spend a lot of time hooting and hollering about impeachment, because impeachment is a numerical and an arithmetic impossibility. You can impeach him with a 50% plus one vote in the House of Representatives. You can impeach him. But I will dare repeat myself and say that if we do that and then send a bill of impeachment over to the Senate, where it dies because there are no Republicans in the Senate who care more about this country than they do about their access to raw, blunt force political power, he will emerge from that stronger than he went in, and it will guarantee his re-election in 2020. So what we're talking about here is a holding action that lasts through January, at the earliest lasts through January the 20th, 2021. All of 2019, all of 2020, and into the start of 2021. I just wanted us to be clear on that. How about that? That's an interesting observation. I thought of the word protection in terms of how juvenile it was. If you had a condom. But Arnold is perhaps Arnold in PA is a little bit more perceptive than me. Arnold says protection. Protection is a mafia term. How about that? So, we need to be clear-eyed, clear-headed. The risk is grave. And I simply want to reiterate that you've got to have a massive and unheard of, a historic level of turnout in order to make any of this stuff come to pass. Okay? Leave with another note. Stop telling us what we can email you, Bob. Oh, wait a damn minute. I didn't see that one. if we had a full staff, we would have long since published a book of Stop Telling Us, Bob. That's good, Lee. That's very good. I have a clip here. Because I think there's some considerable value in this. It comes from my filthy little habit that I engage in every morning, namely watching the MSNBC Morning Zoo Crew. And usually it's a whole bunch of Republicans doing a lot of hand-wringing. But today it was like the clouds parted for a moment. And if there had been a heavenly host singing a chorus, it would not have surprised me. This is kind of a lengthy clip, but just bear with it.
So with this, Charlie Sykes, let me go to you. Let's see here. Yeah. Donald Trump is attacking
Charlie Sykes, Republican, just in case anybody's keeping track.
The media as the enemy of the people, but what is so striking is, if you just look at our show this morning.
Yeah, that long drawn out sigh was from Mika, and just as the setup, this all comes in the immediate aftermath of Trump having tweeted out as if nothing had happened, his declaration that the media are the enemy of the people. Again, this morning. Not kidding. Say it.
Morning.
I mean, Mika's a journalist. Ruth, who we're about to introduce, is a journalist.
Also a Republican.
But we ain't the media. It's a bunch of Republicans who have spent their entire life fighting conservative causes for Republican presidents, for conservative movements.
If he pops any more peas, he's going to break the microphone.
We got Rick Wilson. We had Peggy Noonan. We had Tom Nichols. One Republican after another Republican who is not a journalist, who provides comment, and who is absolutely shocked and dumbfounded by what this man is not only doing to the Republican Party and the conservative movement, but for the to the United States of America. Talk about the derangement of the American mind, because I must say, I'm kind of tired of talking about Donald Trump. I want to talk about the 45% of Americans who actually like what he's doing.
Aha. Ah. The light. It flickers. The bulb. It may yet have some illumination left in it. The clouds have parted. Let's not talk about Trump. Let's talk about the people who enable Trump. Well, now.
By stirring up hatred.
You know, that's exactly right. You know, it's like we can't be shocked by Donald Trump because we know who he is. I mean, we know what is in his DNA. But the way people react, and Tom Nichols mentioned this a little bit before, you know, to turn the lens to those crowds, you know, after this horrific shooting, this tragedy, they're, you know, talking CNN sucks, chanting, you know, that lock her up, and that's...
And by the way, as far as the CNN sucks chant, it's fascinating that, Michael Moore, who found out that he had crosshairs on his face on the maggot mobile, Michael Moore went back and checked his archival footage, and lo and behold, why, there was the bomb stuffer holding up his maggot sign at, I think, the first or one of the first Clyburn rallies down in Florida. And along the way, yes, he got them chanting CNN sucks and chanting a lot of other things.
What's happened is the moral test to the Republican Party that they have failed over and over and over again. This is a man who, the president, has been a man who has stoked our divisions, has stoked the fear and the hostility.
You know, if you were listening to Charlie Sykes, you'd swear that there was never a Willie Horton ad. Or that the state of South Carolina wasn't absolutely plastered with robocalls from the George W. Bush campaign talking about how that John McCain has a Negro baby. You'd swear that never happened. You'd swear that Republicans didn't show up at their convention in 2004 wearing Purple Heart Band-Aids to mock a man who won that medal in Vietnam, who was the opposing party's nominee for president. You'd swear it never happened. Filling the role of Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine this evening is Ron in Raleigh, who says, were we to take back both chambers, Mitch McConnell will still be running the show. He's already made Chuck Schumer look like a fool. 15 judicial appointments so Democrats could go home to campaign. Good God, what an idiot. Yeah, but Chuck's made, I mean, not Chuck, Chinless Mitch has made things a little more difficult for him because he's changed the rules. And the same rules are going to apply. Unless the rules get changed with a new Senate, if they were to take the Senate. You know, the rules of the Senate have to be approved when the Senate is sworn in and brought into session in early January. They could, for instance, insist upon a 60-vote supermajority for all Supreme Court nominees. I don't know. So back to the Republican pearl-clutching and hand-wringing about what the Republicans have become.
Has created this.
You go anywhere in the world
stew.
And speak God, they understand.
Time out. Where the hell did that come from? Oh, God. How much do I hate autoplay? A lot. We're going back to this, I promise. Seems to be gone now. Very good. We can go back to Republican pearl clutching and hand wringing again. Because there's a couple of one-liners, there's a couple of lines coming here that are worth the wait.
And we're being reminded the number of people out there who take him both literally and seriously. So at one level, you have people who are willing to rationalize and defend his behavior. But also, you actually have the folks out there, the haters, who draw oxygen from what this president has done, from the whistles that he has sent. And that's what makes this such a dangerous time. And the fact is, the president of the United States is the arsonist in chief.
Rick Wilson, I am naive. I will be the first to admit I am naive. I never believed what liberals said about us all along. I never believed that there was this undercurrent in the Republican Party of racism, of nativism, of anti-Semitism. I didn't believe it. You didn't believe it. Charlie Sykes didn't believe it. Tom Nichols didn't believe it. And we spent our entire lives telling people it wasn't true. I'll be damned. I'm 55 years old. Bingo. They had us exactly right. They had the party exactly right. What are we to do now?
Joe, I mean, this is...
Forgive me, but I want to buy Joe a beer now. Or, I don't know, a participation trophy or something. You know, back when he was courting them, when he needed them, when he had to have them every 2 years so that he could get reelected or elected in the first place... to the House of Representatives, of course the deplorables didn't exist. Now, that's the one thing that does not happen in any of this exchange, is for one of these people, just one of these Republicans, to step up and say, oh, by the way, Hillary Clinton, I am so sorry. You were so right. They are deplorable. And that little litany, the nativists, the racists, here's where I part company. He refers to it as an undercurrent. How can the entire river be all undercurrent? Does he not remember the rise of the teabaggers? Does he not remember the people with the Purple Heart Band-Aids? Because they were there. And I'm pretty sure he must have seen or heard at least about some of it. When Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, he said, "We have lost the South for a generation." Because he understood that as long as Jim Crow and segregation and all the other nasty, vicious aspects of an apartheid South and other parts of America as well remained in place, that Huey Long referred to as the wool hat vote was happy to vote along with them. But they became Republicans faster than you can say George Corley Wallace. It ain't an undercurrent, Joe. And, you know, don't believe me. Don't believe some damn liberal. But for Christ's sakes, believe Steve Bannon and that little goofball Milo Yiannopoulos. They knew who they were campaigning on to. They knew who they were talking to. And they said before the election even happened, fully half or more of the GOP base is alt-right, and alt-right means Nazi, alt-right means fascist, alt-right means Klansman, and alt-right means sympathizers with all of the above, or any of the above. Okay? Huh. Now, that's a hell of a word. And it's a dandy, Arnold. T-Maga-Bagger. T-Maga-Bagger. That gets a jingle. Okay, so here comes Rick Wilson, Republican, who has... Driftglass, another one of those Republicans to find out that the shock to find out that the Republicans are full of screwed it up. And what Driftglass says is that Republicans shocked to find out that the Republican Party is full of Republicans. That.
Emblematic of the entire problem of the Republican Party being bought out by Trumpism. It revealed a segment of our.
Now. There's where he fails. The entire Republican Party being bought out by Trumpism. Trumpism could not have ever accomplished that if they weren't there in the first place. This was not a transformation. This was an affirmation. Okay? But there's still a good line coming.
Of our demographic, a part of our party that we wanted to pretend was in the closet, and we kept them in the basement and hosed them off once a year for election day. And unfortunately, we now have to face the fact that that element feels empowered and emboldened. And they read tweets like today, which, you know, I'm sure that tweet sounded better in the original German, but they read tweets like today, and they're not taking it as some sort of joking, you know, Trumpism. They take it as marching orders. And
yes, they do. And they're not some remnant. And they're not some fringe. They are the GOP. And Rick still hasn't gotten to that step one of the 12-step program yet. I realized that I was addicted to racists and my party had become unmanageable. But that line about take them out and hose them off and get them to the polls once a year, my pink little ears perked up and I went, well, son of a gun. Maybe the admission is the beginning of wisdom. Steve in New York says, it's okay to buy Joe a beer, but it should be non-alcoholic. Don't give him too much credit. Well, Joe doesn't drink. He says that a lot on the program, so it would probably have to be non-alcoholic. Maybe we could buy him a Shirley Temple or something. Steve in New York, with a bigger point, subject line, it seems wrong to laugh, he says. I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've gotten to the point where I almost feel guilty laughing. I feel guilty showing too much positive emotion, smiling or joking around. In the last several years, we've seen the kidnapping of children and their imprisonment, the murder of millions of Iraqi people, the murder of thousands of Syrians, the massacre of children at Sandy Hook, the destruction of our environment, the abandonment of our fellow Americans in Katrina and Puerto Rico, the murder of our black brothers and sisters at Mother Emanuel, bombs sent to former presidents and other government officials, the murder of several of our Jewish octogenarian, septuagenarian, nonagenarian, and other brothers and sisters. Bob, what possesses a person to look at a 97-year-old woman and murder her in her temple? Maybe nothing possesses the person. Maybe the person is simply weaponized. And the reaction of the president is to completely shed any responsibility, compassion, or responsibility. There's an unparalleled sense of callousness, cruelty, and meanness. We have people actually saying, and they don't mind saying it on TV, that people sent these bombs to themselves. How can it possibly be that we can smile? How can we laugh when we are at this point? Because if we do not take joy in what there is to be taken joy in, Steve, we will drown each other in our own tears. I still remember the words of Kurt Vonnegut. I remain convinced that we were mostly put here to dance. And the other line, I don't know much, but goddammit, babies, we've got to be kind. and in the camaraderie of shared laughter, there is kindness. So that's the best I've got for an answer there. Let's see, back to the people, back to the Republicans, shocked to find out that the Republican Party's full of Republicans.
Maybe it's only a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction, but it only takes a tiny fraction to have a guy walk into a synagogue and kill 11 people. It only takes a tiny...
And there's the tweet. There's great anger in our country, capitalized country. You know, by the way, people have been wondering about the bizarre capitalizations. Here's my guess. He's only... his grandfather was a native speaker of German. And you get these little quirks that come down through generations. It could be that he capitalizes words like he does because mostly it's nouns. And that's a German grammatical convention, capitalizing nouns. There's great anger, but he didn't capitalize anger. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. I suspect he has none. They're just a little anthropological observation, cultural observation.
There's great anger in our country caused in part by inaccurate and even fraudulent reporting of the news. The fake news media, the true enemy of the people, must stop the open and obvious hostility and report the news accurately and fairly. That will do much to put out the flame of anger and outrage, and we will then be able to bring all sides together in peace and harmony. Fake news must end.
Well, the problem, as Jim Acosta of CNN pointed out today and made Sarah Huckabee squirm like she was sitting on a snake, is who he means by enemy of the people. And shouldn't you have the courage to say who the enemy of the people is? And like I said, she squirmed like she was sitting on a snake. It was not pretty.
Fraction of a guy send 14 bombs out to Democratic political leaders and former presidents. These people are hearing this. It's not a dog whistle. It's an air raid siren.
But Rick, the problem is 90% of Republicans supporting. You have people chanting in the crowds. I would have never, ever, ever, over five decades predicted this would happen. After people were targets of bombs, that you actually have the president of the United States still attacking those people, and people in the crowd more disturbingly chanting attacks at CNN and also chanting attacks at Hillary Clinton. Good God, where were they raised? Because they weren't raised in my neighborhood.
Well, they were raised in part in the post-2010 era, Joe. There were this whole separate media silo that built up.
Hold on a damn minute. Joe, they were too raised in your neighborhood. That's the insidious thing about, say, Klansmen. They don't wear their robes all the time. And in places like where Joe grew up and where I grew up, they might not have been Klansmen. They might have been members of the White Citizens Council, and we talked about that. The Klansmen were the shock troops. The White Citizens Council, though, they just went to work in their suits every day at the bank and the accountant and the accounting firm and the church and the law office and the courthouse and the jewelry store and the bookstore and the haberdashery. And so you didn't know unless it was necessary for you to know. And 50, he said five decades ago, Joe, you were 5 years old. So was I. And you didn't know who the Klansmen were. You just knew that those were the elders there at the Baptist church you grew up in. Probably the Southern Baptist church you grew up in, which, when you were 5 years old, Joe Scarborough, was still very much a segregated church and became the Southern Baptist church over the issue of slavery and the continuing issue after the Civil War of support for Jim Crow. Ta-da. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, no, goddammit, Bob, don't try to explain away his bizarre capitalization habits by putting it on the Germans. He's fucking illiterate. Occam's razor, Bob, Occam's razor. That, point taken, point taken. Yeah, with the tweet, Stephen New York, who is a member of the Church of the Dude, if there was ever a time to say it, shut the fuck up, Donnie! Yeah, just a little more of this, and then we'll go to the phones.
And stoke this sense of inferiority and anger every single day. And those folks now have an avatar in Donald
Rick,
Trump.
So thank you for saying that, Rick. I got to ask you, the inferiority complex, the victim complex. I'm a victim. Hollywood doesn't like me. The media doesn't like me. But right. Oh, wait, hold on.
Right.
I own the Supreme Court. I own the United States House of Representatives. I own the United States Senate. I own the United States Presidency. I own the Justice Department of the United States of America. I own the DHS. I own everything, but I'm still a little snowflake who gets their feelings hurt when Hollywood does a movie I don't like. Please explain that to me. They own the world and they're still victims?
Joe, that's the classic trope of all these authoritarians. There's always a conspiracy. There's always the they in brackets going after them. These guys, I mean, this is a sign of how fundamentally weak
fascism. The word you're looking for, bub, is fascism. Meanwhile, Michael and Madison, in the grammatical debate here, capitalizing random nouns, Michael says, oh yeah, I've always thought that was Trump's inner German coming out, either subconsciously or more likely as a deliberate dog whistle to his Nazi supporters. Call me crazy, but yes, I firmly believe more likely than not he capitalizes nouns as a dog whistle. The inconsistency is because he's an idiot who half the time doesn't know what a noun is. Go Fefe. Mm-hmm. Chagged. Right. Lee in New York says, 5 decades ago, I was in school and focused on the Apollo program. If I was more aware of the news, I would have been upset about Vietnam. That too. Yeah, as I've said, my consciousness of sort of world events started pretty much with Watergate, because it was always on when I came home from baseball. That's how it works. God, there's, and by the way, Lee says to Steve in New York, we have to laugh because there's only so much we can cry. That's it. 23 past the hour. And, well, you know, the admission of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom. But don't worry. If Donald Trump is ever gone from the White House, if he doesn't wind up being maximum dictator for life, if he doesn't declare martial law, because somehow or another, Sarah Sanders managed to say that that was a possibility, or wouldn't rule it out. Well, Joe and Rick here, they'll go back to being rock-ribbed Republicans again, because crawling on their knees, bareheaded and shaven-headed, begging for forgiveness, he's probably not in the cards for them. Okay, let's check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
Sorry to make you wait so long, but there was stuff that had to be gotten out.
Oh, I know, I know. And it's all worthwhile. You actually gave me a couple of talking points that I hadn't intended to bring up. But you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about this and that phrase that you uttered a little while ago, moments ago, when Trump is gone from the White House, you remember several years ago, I think it was Hugo Chavez was at the UN addressing the assembly.
You mean when he said, I smell brimstone?
That's exactly what I mean. A day or so after Bush had been there addressing the assembly, he smelt the sulfur in the air, the ambience of the place. I've got to wonder what malodorous aroma will linger and for how long once Trump is gone. They may have.
Do you know what do you know what stale Cheetos smell like?
Yeah.
That.
I was thinking the other night I whipped up a pot of my 15 bean soup with obvious consequences later that night and into the next day, and I'm thinking it'll be worse than that if you get my meaning. But anyway, I didn't call to talk about sulfur in the air. You mentioned growing up wanting to be Roger Mudd. I commend to you his book from a few years ago, The Place to Be, Washington, CBS, and the Glory Days of Television News. You can get a used paperback for $5 on Amazon. It'll make you happy to know what news once was in this country, but it'll make you sad because what's being sent out as news today ain't that. Okay, so there's that. And I'll play the what was I doing 5 decades ago game. That was 1968. I was trying to get my little hippie head around the events of that incredible 1968, wondering if we ever would, and knowing for certain that we would never see the like of those times again. From, I would say, 63, when Kennedy's brains were splattered over the street, the streets of Dallas, all the way up through the mad, mad events of 68, thinking, no, we have better sense. We will never go through this again. And I held on to that ridiculous hope right up until...
For dear life.
Right up until the events of this past week. The fucking mail bombs capped off on Saturday with this travesty, this blot on human history in Pittsburgh. Jesus H. Christ. And I'll tell you, Bob, I haven't had MSNBC or CNN or that level of cable service since spring of this year. And initially I thought maybe, well, you'll be out of the loop. But I'll tell you an interesting thing that happened in the wake of not having that level of cable service. I was able to calm down and step out of the outrage loop in a way long enough to allow my head to clear somewhat and my head to operate in a way that was what was beneficial. And as far as Scarborough and the rest of the recently not Republicans, I don't give a particular shit about anything that they have to say. Now, they might phrase it as some kind of Damascus Road experience, and they've seen the light. Bullshit. Where were you when in the lead up, in the run up, going back to, hell, I would say Reagan's first appearance as a presidential candidate in fucking Mississippi? There's a dog whistle that dead dogs could have heard. So, God damn it. I'm... Jeez, let me calm down a second. There's no way to get your head around Saturday or what happened with these fucking... And I emailed you something a little while ago.
I saw it.
I think, all right, tomorrow that may prove to be worthwhile to listen to address what was in the transcript of Face the Nation yesterday, when John Dickerson had this asshat from Oklahoma senator talking, doing an apology tap dance regarding Trump. I don't even want to go there, but the gist of his argument was, well, the shooter in Pittsburgh couldn't be a part of the problem because he said things against Trump. Well, come on. Give me a fucking break. I know,
Jim Lankford is just another lick spittle, one.
Yeah.
Two, Lankford engaged in the, but what about the guy at the baseball field?
Yeah, yeah.
Once again, I'll point out that Bernie Sanders had not been referring to, say, the Republican members of the Senate as the enemy of the people or putting crosshairs on them or in any way suggesting anyone do them violence.
Yeah, it's just
the guy at the baseball field, and this is not in any way an excuse. I don't support gun violence, period. But he was aggrieved by the fear, the justifiable fear, the real fear, this much was real, that the Republicans wanted to take away access to health care, and it had eaten his brain. He's dead now. He was probably sane when he pulled the trigger, but he had been weaponized by his own mind by the constant drumbeat of, we've got to take away America's health care in order to make America better.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really said that shit, Scott.
And I will remind you and the family, the Horn family, congregation, community, that those events played out on a ball field in my hometown, where back in the 60s, five decades ago, or a little more actually, I used to watch my older brother and the ball field adjacent to that, my younger brother, playing Little League baseball. I don't know that I can be the relentless optimist anymore after this past week, Bob. And I may cry because we all like to hold on to something, but it's damn hard in the wake of this past week. And now that demented circus peanut in chief is imposing himself on the people, the good people of Pittsburgh. What, tomorrow or Wednesday he's going up there?
That's what Eddie said.
The assembled crowd, and it'll take an act of courage on their part and integrity on their part, but the minute he starts speaking, rise in mass in the audience and turn their backs on him until he shuts up and leaves the goddamn room. I know that plays right into the hands of the, you know, the right wing media and commentators, but someone has to send a message that, you know, in big, bold, neon letters, enough with this shit. And I do have a positive thing, a week and a day away from the midterms. I am peering into my crystal crockpot to share my fearless forecast. And I'll be up front. I am not following the Senate or the gubernatorial races, but I have a prediction for the House. The Democrats will need to win 23 seats to take control of the House of Representatives. And when all the dust is cleared, I believe they'll win a total of, pause for dramatic effect,
yes,
37 seats. 37.
So you actually sat there and did all the and did all the navel gazing and the crystal ball stuff? And
no, my crystal ball, I had to sell that for food several years ago. I have a crystal crock pot, and
well, yes, I understand that. Yes.
But yeah, 37, I believe, will be the number. It may be less than that, but I see no reason, if the planets and stars are in good alignment and the people actually show up in numbers.
So did the crystal crockpot tell you where those victories were going to come?
A couple of these races here in California, like Daryl Issa's old seat, will be one of them, and a couple of more out here in California. But the vast majority will come from these suburbs in outside of major metropolitan cities where there are Republican voters who will have seen the wisdom of not sending a Republican from their district back to the U.S. House of Representatives. That's pretty much where the bulk of them will come from. And, you know, you may as well forget about parts of the South and the Midwest and the northern tier of states in terms of the rock-ribbed Republican. I'm talking about districts that every couple of years will change hands back and forth, you know, like northern Virginia, where I grew up. The suburbs of Pittsburgh, the suburbs of Philly, the suburbs of any major city in this country where people still have some sense and can see what's going on and would rather not play into the hands of the lunacy. So,
well, we just got a little update from David in South Carolina, Stan.
Okay.
A rabbi just asked Donald Trump to wait for at least 7 days of mourning, Shiva, he absolutely had to visit. That's reasonable. Well,
that would mean showing up on Election Day. I don't think he's going to do that. Wouldn't that be 7 days?
Well, no. He'll campaign, too. That's what's going to make this so sickening. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, I've done similar calculations as Scott. I'd be really surprised if the Dems take more than 35 seats in the House.
Well, you know, my first number was a little lower. It was about 34. But I really sat down and dwelled upon some of these races, and I said, well, you know, that's another thing. The events of this past week, I don't give a particular shit what it's doing to the Republicans. If anything, I hope it is panicking them in a way that is not productive from their point of view. But I'm hoping that it will galvanize people on our side to say that this is a life and death sort of thing. Unless there's a course correction, unless there's a check put upon Trump, even with Democratic control of the House, that would be a step in the right direction. And I don't know if you saw this, but I posted something the other day, and I think I'll close with this and let somebody else get in. I said the remote possibility exists that shortly before January 20th, 2021, the departing Trump will give a farewell address in which he reveals the following, but I wouldn't bet the rent money. I'm just saying there's a remote possibility. Imagine it. Trump discloses that from the day he announced his candidacy right up to his final hours in office, the entire thing has been a massive piece of elaborate performance art. He never meant a single syllable of it, but merely intended it as a serious object lesson about the gullibility and citizens needing to become much more involved civically and more serious about information they believe or choices they make. Now, I said it's a remote possibility. I wouldn't give it an infinitesimal fraction of a chance of occurring.
I'm glad you're saying that. But
well, in the wake of that, what else can we count on in the days immediately ahead?
Well, okay. So
what we can count on is showing up in a way that we never have before on Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. That was the point of the post.
Well, I want to go into that for just a minute, if it's okay.
It's all right.
Because I have thought something similar.
Really?
And it is it's the kind of magical thinking. The literature on magical thinking is, I mean, you can look it up, you can read about as much on it as you want to. But magical thinking is something that people who get into binds engage in. Often it's a function of somebody sunk in the depths of addiction who hasn't gotten to the point where they want out yet. I can say, you know, it leads to terrible choices. You know, I can save my business if I take the payroll and I spend it all on lottery tickets. Because when I win the lottery, all my problems will be solved. Okay. Or, I'll quit my meth habit day after tomorrow without any help at all. And I've engaged in some of that thinking, you know, what if this guy, and mine's a little bit more like this, okay? What if he did this to destroy the Republican Party once and for all and for good?
Yeah, well, that was kind of underlying but unspoken in my mind game.
And it's at least a little bit palliative, I suppose. But then you realize that there is nothing out there in the historical record that indicates that he is a man of that kind of, or that level of cerebral function.
Yeah, this guy is
it
not.
It just ain't there.
He's not playing three-dimensional chess, if you get my meaning.
No, there's no 11D-dimensional chess or any of that. And which is, you want to talk about what's weird? This is twice in one program. First, okay. you've got a Star Trek reference based on the name Mud from Ron and Raleigh and Lee in New York. And then you just referenced multidimensional chess, and I'm looking at an email from Michael in Madison that he said I don't have to read on the air. But he does say in it, I don't give him much credit or think he's playing seven-dimensional chess.
There you go.
You want to talk about a community that's in tune with each other?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's what drew me to this show. When I discovered it, you know, I stuck with it because this is a hip crowd, as we used to say back in the day. I mean, from you spreading outward, you cannot get here.
I eat much more brisket. I eat much more of that brisket, and I'm going to be really spreading outward, but no, I get your point.
Okay, but here's the thing about your theory about Trump's secret plan to demolish the Republican Party once and for all. Yeah, I even thought about that.
Problem is, it ain't working. It's strengthening the Republican Party.
Well, that's the thing. It falls apart in a couple of key areas. But, you know, first of all, he doesn't have the capacity in his thinking or abilities, because nothing in his past has shown that he could do something like that. But also nothing in his past has shown that he's interested in doing anything that doesn't make him look good and be right and have people go ooh and ah.
No, and in point of fact, there's a brand new lawsuit filed today. I don't know if you saw this. Alleges that he and Uday and Kuse, or Beavis and Butthead, however you prefer to think about them, and Precious Ivanka, engaged in a series of grafts in which they took money in exchange for ripping people off in a variety of different ways. One of them is, and this is funny based when you consider our brief campaign into Horn Nutraceuticals, Trump vitamins.
Oh God.
Let's see. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick.
No, we're on the scale of Alex Jones, chocolate, bone marrow, chicken, wagga wagga. Would Trump vitamins fall? Are they worse? They can't be better.
Well, let's see. The complaint accused Trump, as well as Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Ivanka Trump of taking money from three business entities described by the suit as engaging in a pattern of racketeering activity. The schemes, according to the lawsuit, harmed investors, many of which were described as vulnerable. The three companies at the heart of the allegations are a telecommunications marketing firm, ACN, that paid Trump millions of dollars, the Trump Network, which marketed vitamins, and the Trump Institute, which, according to the lawsuit, offered extravagantly priced multi-day training seminars on Trump's real estate secrets.
Now, the Trump Institute, is that the same as the Trump Foundation? I get my stuff.
No, it's not.
Up.
No, it's not.
God.
No, the Trump Foundation exists to pay $10,000 for 6 foot tall paintings of Trump.
The term Hydra-headed comes to mind when I think of this vast Trump, I was going to say empire, scampire, I think would be the word that we're looking for.
Ooh, that's a quality word.
Scam. What was that one that I did that impressed you the other night? Whiteness? Sublime whiteness.
Yeah, that was
That
was
just came to me. You know, I don't know where it comes from. I just think the creator, if there is one, for sending good thoughts my way that edify other folks and get them roused up. So who's bringing this suit? Is it on the federal level?
It's brought by an outfit called the Tesseract Institute. And, of course, the news story immediately pointed out, which is funded by a wealthy Democratic donor. But that does not affect whether or not the proof is sufficient. If the proof's there, it doesn't matter if it was brought by the angel Gabriel.
Yeah.
And blown through and blown out a trumpet. Trumpet, see what I did there?
And you got to figure, we haven't heard much about or from, well, we never hear anything from Mr. Mueller. But that is a shoe somewhere waiting to drop. And you got to figure.
Well, that's why there's an ongoing conversation about when Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Tood is going to exit screaming and whether he will jump or be pushed. Mm-hmm. Because the minute he's gone, probably Mueller is too. And one way or the other, it probably happens after a week from tomorrow. So, you know, be cognizant of that. I mean, Jesus, you want to talk about brutal. He got called. Sessions got called out today in Boston. I don't know if you saw this or not.
No.
But he was. Sessions went to Boston to talk about religious liberty. Sit, liberty, sit.
Woo.
And, okay, hold on here. I think I can get the audio pretty quick. And he didn't just get called out. He got called out by members of the clergy.
Was this something about the, not reading the Bible or?
They dropped a, they dropped some serious Matthew 26 on his head.
Oh, okay. Because I saved the link. I just haven't read it yet. Go ahead.
Well, I'm looking for the... come on. Scroll, damn it.
Oh, while we're waiting, let me tell you about a positive thing that happened regarding my recently acquired habit of pipe smoking. Mm-hmm. Saturday night, the people in the complex in the big apartment in the back, young folks, they work from there. They're into all sorts of, you know, cutting edge technology and stuff. They had a big old party. And I went out front to smoke a bowl this will make you laugh, a bowl of Edward G. Robinson. But it's not what you think. I wasn't.
Well, that reminds me of that. That reminds me of the kid in the kid in the private school who took him some granny cookies.
Well,
did you hear about that one?
Yeah, I read about that. But anyway, the name of the tobacco is Edward G. Robinson, and it's one that when he was around, specifically had a guy blend for him to his particular taste, and it's a nice little pipe tobacco. So I went out front and had a bowl. And one of the attendees of the party walked by through my cloud of smoke, which I apologized for. And he said, no, not to worry. He said, that smells great. So anyway, for the dad on your list or the pipe
smoking granny. I thought you were going to say, dude, can you share? Give me a hit
of
that, man.
I thought they might wonder what the hell was in my pipe. But if they got a whiff of it, they knew it wasn't anything dramatic. But anyway, go ahead.
By the way, Jude, out in the far in the Great Northwest, said of the ability of the members of the community to connect with one another, it's a manifestation of collective consciousness, the Horn family's alignment on the high level of personal being. I like that, and I like to think that Jude's right. Also, note coming from Michael in Madison. Subject line, magical thinking. With all due respect to both you and Scott, oh boy, here it comes. There's a greater chance of impeachment and conviction removal than there is of this silly theory. And I agree wholeheartedly. This was just magical thinking. This was just a desperate attempt.
And like I said, it was my prefacing it was the possibility is extremely remote.
Yeah, well.
Say this won't be happening, so let's look at something tangible that could be happening. And better be happening.
Well, Michael says, I realize we're dancing on the head of a pin, arguing over who will fall off first in a world of probability the size of the entire universe. But still, like you just said, he just doesn't have enough cerebral function for that.
No. The spirochetes have seen to that.
So anyway, I found my little clip. Right. And Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions III, went all the way up into enemy territory, you know, Boston. Remember, his great-great-great-grandpappies were probably entirely supportive of the notion that was floated in a paper in the South back, I think, before the war, in which they argued that a giant ditch be dug around Massachusetts and Massachusetts then be floated out to sea.
That was a Goldwater proposition.
No, well, no, it was, well, it, Goldwater bogarted it off of the pre-Civil War.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So anyway, he took his mush mouth up to Boston and to lecture on religious liberty and found himself uncomfortably accosted by some members of the clergy who actually take things like the Gospels seriously.
Is one reason why
I was hungry, and you did not feed me. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. I was naked, and you did not clothe me. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me.
I thank you for your comments. And
in prison, and you did not visit me. Brother Jeff, as a fellow United Methodist, I call upon you to repent, to care for those in need, to remember that when you do not care for others, you are wounding the body of Christ.
Well, thank you for those remarks and
thank you for damning me to an eternal hell, but but it goes on.
But I will just tell you, we do our best every day to fulfill my responsibility to enforce the laws of the United States.
So another minister stands up and defends him, and meanwhile the Boston PD are carrying out the first minister, and then they come after the second one too, while the audience yells, "Boo, go home! Boo, go home!"
Actually represented in the God in the book of Isaiah.
All right.
Yeah, that's right. The maggots booed the ministers of Christ Jesus.
Well, there you go. But it seems to me that Sessions, I'm sure he was standing, he strode up there. He's not a man of big stature at all. He strode up there in all of his pumped up Keebler elfness, I'm sure, to say, well, thank you for your comments, but we're trying to uphold the law. Weren't the Pharisees who took Jesus to Pilate on trumped up charges upholding the law? Wasn't that sort of what they were up to?
That was what they argued, yes.
Well, I would say that there's a flaw in Mr. Sessions' theory about those particular laws, at least vis-a-vis the words of Jesus in King James English in red in my Bible that's holding up one of the short legs of the table here. I don't know.
Well, see, that's the thing. Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, will get you into a corner in a real hurry if you start actually if you try to get around what he actually taught. It's, mm-hmm. You know, for purposes of this discussion, we're saying that, you know, he really existed, and that he walked the earth, and that he taught, hey, let's not be so shitty to each other. If you, and this has always been the problem of Christianity, not to turn this into prayer meeting Wednesday, but if you actually follow the teachings of Jesus, you're going to be hard pressed to participate in any sort of civil governance, because you're always going to find yourself in a situation having to oppress somebody. So you wind up engaging in a lot of pretzel logic and contortions, just as Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III's great-great-great-great-grandpappy and his great-great-great-great-grandpappy's contemporaries did when they said, "Why, looky here, right there, there's the Apostle Paul, and he says, slaves, obey your masters."
Mm-hmm.
That's right. God ordains the institution of slavery all through the Bible now.
Well, I'm no Bible scholar. I think we've established that in the weeks and months and years that have gone by.
I only play one on the radio.
But I know for certain that if Sessions and the rest of his crew were the believers that they claim to be in their pious pronouncements, the proper response to the so-called caravan and anybody else seeking help and asylum and assistance would not be to put them in cages or jail them or banish them. It would be take a box of Mrs. Paul's fish sticks, a loaf of day-old Jewish rye, do your mojo and mumbo-jumbo, and feed 5,000 unexpected drop-in lunchtime guests. Am I reading that wrong?
No, you've pretty much got it. And you got to remember, we once had a Baptist Sunday school teacher for a president of the United States who, as much as he was capable of doing, tried to live his faith while he was busy being president. And the other Christians could not vote him out of office fast enough in favor of a man who very seldom darkened the doorway of a church, but did frequently darken his hair.
Well, I don't know. We've run rings around him logically. If that should count for something, I hope.
I don't think it would even buy me a shot of cheap tequila across the river, unfortunately, Scott.
No, they have very selective seeing and hearing and speaking.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's the way they're wired. But let's not be dismayed, I guess. I've made a turnaround. I'm the relentless optimist again. Let's not be dismayed, friends. Let us show up. Let us hike up our big boy pants and firmly resolve to show up in numbers that will boggle the mind on Tuesday, November 6th.
It better be mind-boggling.
My grandmother Carrie's birthday, God rest her. And let's do that course correction and send that message and in big neon letters say enough so that we can once again put out to the world the message that the lunatics are not, in fact, in charge of the proceedings, that there is a cadre of people who know what the deal is and are doing whatever they can to make sure that that we do not repeat this asinine, historic mistake ever again. And you've got to start somewhere, and I would think retaking the House would be a good way to go.
I would agree. I would say that that doesn't mean give up on the Senate.
No, not at all.
But beyond that, all God's children said amen. Scott, I got to roll. We're right there.
Any number of things can happen, Bob. And if we retook the Senate too, I would just, as my Jewish friends say, I would plots. I would just plots. And you can look it up if you're not sure what that means. So.
All right. Very good. Take care, Scott. Have a good evening.
All right.
Go enjoy a bowl of Edward G. Robinson.
Well, I think I will, you dirty rat, or whatever. I'll see you.
It's curtains. Curtains, I tell you. Curtains for you. Oh, they're
Thank
lovely.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rico.
Later.
All right.
Our buddy Scott. We're going to close with a little bit of edumacation. Shiva, courtesy of Lee in New York. Shiva starts on the day of the burial. A Jew will not sit Shiva on the Sabbath and Holy Day. Here's the problem for Trump. Would he rather be at a rally and get applause or have to be measured and calm and sit while others talk too? Shiva. He'd hate it. Trump wants to go to Squirrel Hill to be followed by cameras and not have to share the spotlight. There we go. So that brings us to the end of the program. I hope this has been some degree of help. And we'll be talking about this, obviously, more, because the repercussions from this are many and monstrous. And I don't know if you're like me, but I'm sitting here wondering what comes next, because what made me feel particularly awful on Saturday is that I closed out things from Friday on the front porch, and I commended us for having a good time and suggested that our laughing together and carrying on a little bit was healthy and healing and right and good. But because I am a little ray of fucking sunshine, at the end of the program, I did issue a little bit of a warning. And that was that it was good to take a breather, but to understand that there was every possibility in the world that it could and would get worse. And then I got up Saturday morning, and it was. So, not talking about sitting around on tenterhooks or anything, but just be strong. Be strong. And we'll get together tomorrow and carry the conversation forward. Thanks to all of you who make the program happen. Thanks to all of our subscribers, and thanks to everybody who chips in during the program and any other times of the day to help keep this going. Thank you so very much. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in our little conversation. I say that every night, and I mean it with all the sincerity that I have in my being. I recognize what it is to share our time together and the fact that it is finite. And it is an honor and a privilege that you feel like this is time well spent. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.